morning. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Taylor Velazquez. Being in foster care can be challenging, but for teens, it can be even more stressful. Most young adults are balancing school, work, and their social life. Teens in foster care are balancing all of that on top of court dates, the trauma of being taken from their families, and the uncertainty of their living situation. They also face big challenges when they age out of the system into adulthood, with much higher risks for ending up unhoused. This morning, we'll talk about what it's like to live in foster care with advocates, folks with lived experience, lawyers, and the Children, Youth, and Families Department. And we want to hear from you. Have you been a kid in foster care, or did you age out of the system? Are you a foster parent? What gaps are you seeing in the system that needs addressing? You can email us at letstalk@kunm.org, or you can call in live to 505-277-5866. And my first guest this morning is Alyssa Davis, a youth advocate at New Mexico CAN. Good morning, Alyssa. Thanks for joining us. Well, it looks like we don't have Alyssa on the line right now, so I'm going to pivot to our other youth advocate from NMCAN. Hi, Michaela. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
And my first question for you is, you were in foster care system as a young adult, and you eventually aged out. When approaching your work with the young people you now work with, how do you prepare them for that whole process?
So with NMCAN, we normally hold events that we bring young people to. There's a lot of classes speaking at public events or parenting classes for our youth who do become parents themselves. We hold a lot of events with going to outings like the zoo or holding events at Explora, just trying to bring in those youth to let them know about our services.
And you have a long history of advocating not only for the youth you work for, but your past experiences in order to make the system better. And you successfully advocated for your first foster youth employer tax credit in the country back in 2018. How does this law work, and how has it impacted youth getting jobs?
So this was actually one of my biggest successes, I want to say, because I was a big part of going to the roundhouse when it was just a bill and speaking to state representatives and going and being in the council hearings and stuff like that. And this has impacted even my life as a young adult. My first job ever, I was able to work at a law firm that I was able to get this job through NMCAN. And I got connected with this law firm that gave me employment. And I was there for almost 2 years. And they were able to collect a tax credit of $1,000 for employing me and providing me skills that I later on took to other jobs and was able to maintain employment. This tax credit opportunity has helped a lot of our former foster youth or current ones, because it does give that employer that tax credit to employ us. So it's a good incentive, I think. And it, like I said, it even helped me find employment and continues to help me, because I do know about it, and I always let at job interviews, or once I get the job normally, I'll let them know hey, did you know about this? And they normally don't, but once I let them know, I'm sure that they don't mind taking or getting more information on it.
Right, for sure. And, you just talked about how that had implemented all these skills that you were taking throughout your life now. And you also advocated for education. You actually worked on a requirement of rewarding partial credits for work completed in previous schools. How can school be an obstacle for foster care youth as you continue helping young people navigate through the foster care? What is the biggest change you're seeing now?
So, I think what really motivated us to work on this was that a lot of foster youth, they experience moving around a lot. They never really have a secure place. And at times you may think that everything is going perfect in your foster home or at your group home. And little do you know, like your Medicaid won't pay for another month or your foster parents don't see you staying there. So you have to find somewhere else to go. And so a lot of these foster youth were not being, their credits weren't being transferred because the school either didn't accept those credits or credits were different, sometimes you have to move really far, like to a different town or city or whatever. So credits didn't transfer. And a lot of kids were seeing that even though they were putting in the work and they were there at school and they were there in the classroom, their work wasn't showing that because their credits weren't being transferred. So we really worked really hard on this to make sure that even though sometimes we kind of are all over the place, not through any fault of our own, of course, but just because the situation that we are in, that to make sure that our credits transfer over. And I know that this has helped a lot of foster youth. Even like I think I spoke to a young person the other day and they were telling me about their credits. They're like, thank goodness about that policy change or something like that, that was that we were eligible to get my credits to transfer over to my new high school. And so I know that it still impacts youth today. And also, like, being able to make it to college, which is something that not a lot of us get to do.
Right. And I want to pivot to Alyssa Davis now, a youth advocate at New Mexico CAN. Good morning, Alyssa. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi.
Awesome. It's great to have you on the show. And, you know, Michaela was just talking about the obstacles that are presented to youth in education. But can you talk about what you would say the biggest obstacles that youth are facing in foster care overall?
I think the hardest one would be housing, as we have a hard time finding homes or apartments. Places that will rent to us, or in general, finding somewhere for us to go. Because when you're 18, you're out there. Some are lucky to get into transitional living programs, but that's not always the case. So I think that's a very huge obstacle, which I'm really glad about the other bill that we had recently just passed, this previous legislation for extending foster care for up to 21, where youth can actually have a stable home while they finish high school, try to get into college, and do those basic needs that other kids get to do around that age, stay at home with their parents. But we don't get that luxury of stability. And our 18th birthday, we're just kind of out in the world, and the struggles of finding stable housing or even being able to get a job when we're still in high school is very difficult.
Right. I can only imagine. And do you mind sharing a little bit about your experiences in the foster care setting that ultimately led you to NMCAN to help you get that stability you were just talking about?
Yes, they help us a lot with the stability, like of finding resources and how to navigate the housing, like the apartments, and how to apply for them and keep our credit good. And they offer a lot of classes on credit and having match funds up to $3,000 of that we can match to for a down payment on an apartment or first month's rent and a computer from school. So things like that is very beneficial and helpful.
And, you know, most youth aren't encountering the legal system at such a young age. But what was it like for you going through the legal system, especially as a teen? Were your opinions considered and were you given updates about your case?
The legal system, when I was going through it, it was very rocky. It was very, I didn't get to meet with lawyers. Like my lawyer, we had a new one. I had a new one literally every time I moved with placements, which was
every time I moved to a new home or a new foster home, there was a new lawyer, or I didn't know the lawyer, or I never met them. So the only good thing that came out of the whole court system was my judge. He was an awesome Judge Romero, who really like loves his job and was good at it and supported the kids. So that was the one good thing, was having a good judge, and I think that was very helpful. But when it came to the lawyer side, it was just, it was very lacking a lot. So it was just, I didn't know my rights or that I even had rights. So
it just has to be scary and unsettling as a teen to not have permanent housing while looking towards your future after aging out. Do you feel your mental well-being was a priority for the people overseeing you?
I'm sorry.
Can you repeat
the last part?
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
With all that being said and all the stress that you guys go through, do you feel like your mental well-being was a priority for people overseeing you?
I think it was not necessarily a priority, but it was something they focused on too much, I guess, to the point where it was hurting my mental health. And and I will give an example about that. It's just they put us in treatment facilities or centers when there's no room for us for our foster home. So they put us in a mental facility or somewhere to that we don't really need to be, but they focus on that heavily. So I don't know if they're really helping those that really do need it, need that extra support and help. I think they focus on it too much and overdose us with medication too much. So I'm hoping that's changing in the near future with a lot of things that we've been working on, and not have that experience for any other young youth. So I really hope that does change.
Right. And, you know, you just spoke so much about what it's like to go through the foster care system and really take those next steps into adulthood. And in 2020, the extended foster care program called Fostering Connections was implemented. But before, did you feel like you were prepared to go out of foster care? And what do you tell youth now?
I was not prepared to leave foster care. I know I was one of the few lucky ones to get a transitional housing from New Day for aged out youth and homeless youth. I was very lucky to receive, to have gotten a spot, but those spots were very few, very selective, very hard to get into. And I really was not prepared for the other things that came with aging out of the system. Like I was not finished with high school. And so I still had to try to finish high school, but my main priority was finding a job and having a home. And when someone at school heard me say that, they're like, "What do you mean school's not your biggest priority?" And I'm like, "Well, it's not. I can't have that luxury of going to school and trying to graduate. I have to work. I have to make sure I'm not homeless on the streets. Like, that's my worst fear of, especially being in foster care, coming from that background. My worst fear is being on the streets, having experienced that before as a child. So my main goal was not school, which I was really saddened at the time. It took me a while, but I did get finished finally. But I think the extended foster care program would definitely help with education so much more now that youth are able to actually finish, because we have such a late start. We move school so much. We have court dates, so we have to miss school. So we just are a lot more.
I hate to cut you off, Alyssa, but unfortunately we have to pause for just a minute. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9. I'm Taylor Velazquez, and we'll be right back.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
Listeners appreciate how nonprofit organizations are helping the community. Nonprofit underwriting at KUNM highlights your work while supporting KUNM programming. To become a nonprofit underwriter, call Aaron Steele at 505-277-2163.
On the next Alternative Radio, Ray McGovern on the hidden history of U.S., Ukraine, and Russia relations. That's Alternative Radio, Saturday evenings at 6, right here on 89.9 FM KUNM, KUNM.org, Albuquerque.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Taylor Velazquez. We're taking your calls about foster care. Have you ever considered being a foster care parent, or are you a foster care parent? What have those experiences been like? Give us a call at 505-277-5866 and let us know. And I want to go back to our guest, Alyssa Davis. Before the break, she was talking more about how she felt not prepared to go out into the world, into adulthood, and what she tells the youth she works with now. Alyssa, would you mind just finishing up your thought?
It's just so exciting to have this new thing in place to be able to have youth succeed more in going to having that extended care. So it's been a blessing, and I'm sure I wish I had it, but I'm glad to have advocated for it so that it can benefit many other youth, because it's going to change the face of foster care and youth not having to be a stigma of being another statistic, falling into a category of not being a success in life. So I think this is going to be great change.
And now I would like to welcome in Erica Sanchez, Director of Policy for NMCAN. Good morning, Erica. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
And we just heard from two of your young people about the challenges they faced, what they wish they had, and how you guys helped them. What are the major problems you're seeing when kids are walking through NMCAN's doors?
Well, so as Alyssa and Michaela have said, young people who have been removed from their homes and disconnected from their families face additional challenges as they're transitioning to adulthood. And really what young people have been telling us for years is everyone shouldn't be focusing on putting Band-Aids on these issues that are so far down the road. We need to talk about the fundamental ways that we are viewing and working with families. We really need to lift up the conversation that people aren't having, and that's the place where we can have the most impact, which is not separating families, but supporting them. We keep seeing that systems do not do a good job raising children, and that children do their best in families and communities. So we really need to, as a state, work to implement some community-centered approaches that address poverty and really support families. Family separation is traumatic for children. Everything that they face while in foster care is traumatic for children. And so we really shouldn't look at the removal of children as a solution for families struggling with unstable housing or child care needs or food insecurity or physical or mental health.
It's estimated that 2,300 kids are in foster care in New Mexico. How does NMCAN help these young people navigate the foster care system?
So we work with young people to develop their skills and drive systems change, so improving systems so they are better for young people and families coming after them. And we really work with young people to develop their leadership skills. So those skills that they're using in their advocacy are skills that benefit them in all aspects of their life, like education or employment or advocating for their health or for their children.
And aging out of foster care most likely happens at the age of 18 unless they opt out or opt in otherwise. What does aging out mean for these young people? Do young people feel they're prepared to take those next steps?
So when they age out, whether that's at 18 or now 21 with postal connections. You know, young people often have, since they've been disconnected from their families and communities, they don't have those support networks that other people have, which as Alyssa and Michaela said, it's more difficult to navigate that transition to adulthood when you don't have those networks, when you don't have the skills that and experiences that you would have developed if you were living in your own home. And so we really just work with young people to develop those skills.
And at NMCAN, you also work on systemic issues. What policy changes would you like to see?
So what we would like to see is a shift to supporting families, ensuring that they have what they need to safely care for their families. And we want to see less children coming into the foster care system and more people staying in their communities with their families. And it's really important that we include the voices of the young people and the families that are impacted by policies or potential policies. They are the people who know what they need and what will most benefit them. So one important component of our work is including young people at all of those tables where those conversations are happening. So it's just really important to have the voices of people with lived experiences when you're making those decisions.
Now I want to bring in Beth Hillia, Deputy Secretary of the New Mexico Child, Youth, and Families Department. Good morning, Beth. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Taylor. Thanks for having me.
So far this morning, it seems like foster care can be very complex and no two cases are the same. Do you mind giving an overview of the foster care system and what you guys kind of see every day?
Sure. That's a big question. So foster care exists to address the extreme circumstances where families can't provide for their children safely. We really only want to intervene in families where there is neglect or abuse to such an extent that we can't support the family in their own home with their own parents. We know, as Erica, Alyssa, and Michaela have said, that children do their best when they're with their families or with their extended families if they can't be with their parents themselves. So we really want to only remove in the most extreme circumstances. And the way the system works is we become aware of families when community members who care about children call us on our statewide central intake and tell us that they think a child is being harmed in some way. Either they're being neglected or they're being abused. We get that call. We prioritize the call depending on how serious the allegations are. And then we send investigators out to find out what's really happening for a child and what we can do to help that family improve their circumstances. If the conditions are so severe that a child is unsafe in their home, it's only then that we'll remove the child from the home. And our really driving goal in those circumstances is to place a child at first with someone in their family. I'm sorry, I don't remember which guest said it, but kids really do better with their families. It's terrifying to go into a home where a child doesn't know anyone, where the culture is different, where the practices are different, the food is different, the bed is different, you don't have your toys, you don't have your friends potentially. So we really try and place kids with their families first. And then we provide services to the family to try and bring them back home. And in most cases, kids do go home. So,
and this morning we're talking about teenagers and placing teenagers in foster homes. You know, they're still trying to find their way in the world. They're at that age where they're starting to challenge the world around them and they have that teenage angst. Do you have a harder time placing teens? Is there something you have to go to foster care parents and really talk to them about?
Yeah, I mean, teenagers are harder to place. Infants are very appealing to people, and teenagers come with a whole set of life experiences that sometimes resource parents. That's what we call foster parents now, because they are a resource both to the children and to the families that we serve. So resource parents can be coached and be especially interested in older youth, and we want to make sure that we support them in providing the services and care, love, dedication that older youth need.
And before we go further into specifics, I think it's important to talk about the Kevin S. lawsuit that was settled back in 2020. Mm-hmm. The settlement has been touted as groundbreaking and the first of its kind in the nation. Can you kind of walk me through the settlement and what it's asking of both CYFD and the Human Services Department?
Sure. So I just want to put a little bit of context around the Kevin S. lawsuit before we even go into what we committed to do to improve the system. Kevin S. may be touted as one of the first of its kind in the nation, but actually most states in the nation have actually experienced a lawsuit similar to Kevin S. So it's not a particularly unusual kind of lawsuit. The lawsuit against the state really raised some fundamental issues about how our system works in New Mexico. And we agreed, because we believe we need system change, we believe to some fundamental systemic changes in four areas. One is that we agreed to create a trauma-responsive system of care that relies on collaborative decision-making with agencies, community partners, but most importantly, children and families. We agreed to ensure that children are placed in the most family-like settings, so the least restrictive environments and appropriate placements, and that was in response to concerns about kids being placed out of state unnecessarily and also in offices. And we also agreed to fully implement the Indian Child Welfare Act and to make sure that we provide culturally appropriate and culturally responsive services to our Native American children and families. And last but not least, we agreed to rebuild our behavioral health system and ensure that the children and parents in our system get the behavioral health services that they need in their own communities.
And talking about that, the CYFD and Human Services Department was kind of given increments to meet when it comes to addressing all those four issues like you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. How is the department doing in implementing these mandates?
So we're working really, really hard. And I will just say, like, as I mentioned, most states have had lawsuits like this. And in many, many other states, these lawsuits take between 16 and 20 years to accomplish the goals of the lawsuit. We set some really, really aggressive timeline goals for ourselves because we believe fully in the commitments we made in the lawsuit. So we hope to be out of this settlement in 5 years. The first year was challenging for us. I won't say that we hit the targets we intended to hit, but we are working incredibly hard and making tremendous progress now on all of those commitments.
For teens, they really want to fit in and do everything that their peers are doing. How is CYFD providing the resources so that foster kids are able to find part-time jobs, go to school activities like prom or join their clubs, mm-hmm. and even apply to the very tedious process of college applications?
Sure. So a number of years ago, I'm not going to remember exactly when, but a number of years ago, we embraced the idea of prudent parenting in the system. And that idea is that our resource parents should be able to behave as they would toward their own children when making decisions about whether children in their care can do things like go to prom or drive a car or have a sleepover, just like they would if it was their very own child. And so they don't need to come to the department's workers and say, I want my foster child to be able to go to prom. It used to be that they needed to get permission from the department for all those kind of decisions. Now we just say, we trust you, foster parents. You are good parents. You know what considerations to take into account to know whether the child is safe. And so we allow you to do it. So we support the resource parents in making those kind of decisions for them.
And I also want to bring in Eli Fresquez, Director of Children's Rights at the New Mexico Children, Youth, and Families Department. Good morning, Eli. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
And to start, yes, we can hear you perfectly. And to start off, the Office of Children's Rights is a new office at CYFD. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you and your team are doing and why the office was created?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a really exciting initiative. It was started last year, and we've really been working diligently to set it up. And our core function is really to provide a voice for children and youth in CYFD and provide them with services. So if they have questions or concerns about public benefits or disability, or if they have questions about education or immigration services, they can come to us. And it's a really exciting place. And we also have a foster child youth bill of rights as well. And folks can find that on cyfd.org under youth bill of rights. And so we really want to let folks know that these kinds of services are available for children and youth who are receiving CYFD services. And, you know, I do want to point out, it's really great to hear the voice of teens and youth who have a shared experience with CYFD. I think Michaela had mentioned education and those kinds of challenges with placements. We've been working really closely with a lot of local school districts, including Albuquerque Public Schools, with something called Every Student Succeeds Act. It's a federal law. Really trying to maintain school of origin and really trying to help youth and teens and transitioning young adults to have those kinds of education services so that we can minimize transitions and really support them. And I think Alyssa had mentioned about not knowing her rights. And so we really want to encourage, you know, our workers and also people within the system of adjudication to know that there is a foster child and youth bill of rights. It's available for everyone. It's on our website. And also we have a dedicated phone line. So if folks are, you know, if children or youth who are receiving services want to reach out to us, they can call the number. And the number is 505-228-6797.
Trauma is something that comes up a lot in these conversations about foster care. Your office provides direct representation for youth addressing mental health services. How do you all ensure that mental health treatment can be positive experiences for youth?
Yeah, so we do a lot of collaboration with our partners at the Human Services Department and also with our behavioral health service providers, and then, of course, our behavioral health experts here at CYFD. So we really believe in an individual planning focused and teaming and wraparound services. So, you know, one thing, and Beth had mentioned this about Kevin S., is, you know, these behavioral health services that we're trying to rebuild. But it's really required us to be collaborative with our other partnering agencies. So, again, working really closely with the behavioral health experts at HSD and CYFD to provide those wrap services for children, teens, and transitioning youth.
And you work with a team of youth advocates. How has this changed the way you look at foster care? I mean, what are they urging you to do or urging you to implement?
Yeah, you know, it's all about listening, and it's about getting out into the community, listening to resource families, listening to children and youth, because they really know what the issues are. So they're the voice. And so I really see our office as a place to learn from the children and youth who are receiving our services, because they know where the gaps in services are. So just hearing Michaela and Alyssa today is really great. And, you know, we have a lot of ways of providing services, but we need to hone those services in based on what we hear from our youth and children.
Great. And it's time for a quick break. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Taylor Velazquez, and we'll be back in a minute.
Just imagine the programs and services you can help grow this spring when you donate your vehicle to KUNM. We accept cars, trucks, boats, RVs, and more. It's easy to give, and the pickup is free. Our vehicle donation support team is available 7 days a week, and we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Call 888-KUNM-CAR to schedule your vehicle donation today. That's 888-586-6227.
Every day, all around the world, this centuries-old art form is thriving. Classical music is made new with fresh interpretations of the great works and with groundbreaking premieres. There's a literal world of creativity to be discovered and shared. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the best from concert halls around the globe on APM's Performance Today.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
And we're back. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. There's still time to call in this morning at 505-277-5866. And I want to bring back Eli, the Director of Children's Rights at New Mexico Youth, Children, Youth, and Families Department. Eli, you were just talking about how you're working with youth advocates and how you're going to hear their voices throughout your work and what you're doing. But how will you ensure that youth first voices are heard?
Yeah, I think we're going to ensure that by, again, listening and getting out in the community. We've been providing a lot of trainings on our procedures. Youth can reach out to us. So these are youth who are receiving services at CYFD, foster children, and they can file a grievance with our office. We have a dedicated email address, and that's cyfd.youthgrievance@state.nm.us. And of course, they can call or text that number I just gave earlier, 505-228-6797. And they can file a grievance with us in our office, and we have two children's rights specialists on staff who will help investigate and really see where are the log jams going in the service arrays, in the systems that we have. We also have on staff an education rights attorney, an immigration rights attorney, and we will soon be having a disability rights attorney joining us as well. So we're open if there are issues or concerns, or if someone wants to reach out and talk with somebody, if they need some navigation through the CYFD system, they can reach out to us directly, and we're required by our procedures to contact folks either the same day or the next day and begin that conversation and see what we can do, whether it's a formal grievance or an informal grievance.
And I want to include Beth Helia, Deputy Secretary for New Mexico Children, Youth, and Families Department. You know, we've heard just from a lot of people this morning that foster care really counts on community and everyone that works and goes into it. So why is it so important to build community support systems?
Well, if you think about your own existence and your own childhood and your family, really none of us grow up in an isolated family. And we really all have natural supports that we rely on without even thinking about it. We rely on teachers, we rely on coaches, we rely on mentors, rely on daycare programs, and we really can't function in isolation. So it's just a natural way that humans interact with each other, and so we're trying to recreate that for children and youth who unfortunately have to be removed from their families. I wanted to just acknowledge something, if you don't mind me going back just a little. You were talking earlier about sort of over-medication, and Alyssa and Michaela touched on this, and I wanted to just acknowledge that, you know, a number of years ago, one of the ways we brought in community was on the issue of over-medication of children in foster care, which was a nationwide epidemic, actually. And with input from Michaela and Alyssa and a number of other youth and professionals from the community, we've created protocols now at CYFD to make sure that children in foster care are not over-medicated. And so we have regular processes looking for red flags, like very young children who are on psychotropic meds, medications being used off-label, or multiple medications being used at once. And so we're now tracking and making sure that kids are not being over-medicated or used inappropriately. And that Alyssa and Michaela were critical in that change of practice.
And I would like to introduce my last guest, Erica Poindexter, lawyer and resource parent. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you.
And we've been talking about the Kevin S. lawsuit throughout the morning. With the lawsuit, with each department involved, should be making these incremental progress, like we had mentioned. In your legal opinion, do you think they're meeting that standard that's set out for them?
No.
Okay. And can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
I am not directly involved in the Kevin S. lawsuit, but I have spoken with a number of attorneys who are, and There's just a concern that those milestones are not being met, and more importantly, that the youth meant to be helped by that lawsuit are not feeling change. And that is, you know, of course, that's the whole purpose, is that we want them to feel that change. We want families to feel that change. And yes, these things do take a lot of time to implement. There's no question about that. And part of that is building a network of services that will help in that. And I think one of the problems that we have is that our mental health services, in particular in New Mexico, went through a great deal of change. And so they are not as robust as we need them to be to serve the children and youth of New Mexico.
And when we're talking about foster care, some people might think that it was really a misconception that when kids get taken out of their homes, they're taken for good and they go into the system. But we had talked about reunification, especially when it comes to teens. Does reunification happen often, and what does that look like?
It does happen often. It should happen often. I think one of the issues is, and I think as a community, the community needs to understand that that is CYFD's goal. The goal is not to take children permanently out of their homes and find them new homes. That's not what CYFD's mandate is. They are trying to reunify families. And so that can be difficult and draining for every person involved in that, but particularly our youth. They enter the system at different ages. And so we need to look very closely at what it looks like for a child who is 7 entering the foster care system versus a child who's 14, because they're going to have very different life experiences. And we really need to concentrate on the idea that we need to tailor care for that specific child.
And so far this morning, we've heard from young people who's been in the system. We've heard from department heads that kind of walked us through what that process looks like. But you actually represented biological parents of kids who had gone through the foster care system. What does it look like to represent those parents? And have your clients been stigmatized by the system?
It can be very difficult for those parents. I think everyone who encounters foster care as a biological parent is going to feel some level of stigma. No one wants to be told that they're not properly caring for their child, but there definitely are times where it is appropriate for there to be intervention to make sure everyone in the home is safe. I was lucky to have very good clients who really wanted to work with CYFD, were open to the plan that CYFD had to reunify them with their children and work those plans to get those kids back in their home as quickly as possible. And my role in that was obviously I am advocating for those parents, but also oftentimes I was counseling them along the way to make sure that they maintain connection with their caseworker, to make sure that they were continuing to engage with the services that were being provided, because those were critical to them getting their children back.
And you're also a resource parent on top of representing in the court, and you have adopted in the past. Can you talk more about why you wanted to become a resource parent and what that process looked like for you?
So I actually had no intention of becoming a resource parent. My son, when he was, I believe he was 6 years old, just really, he wanted a sibling. He really wanted a sibling. So I said, okay, let's look at adopting. And, you know, I wanted to do that locally. I didn't want to do a foreign adoption. At some point, I spoke with someone at CYFD, and they introduced the idea of becoming a resource parent. And after talking with my son and family members, we decided that that would be what we would like to do. That if we could help kids for a specified period of time, get back to their homes, that we would be willing to do that. And if for some reason something didn't work out, we wanted to be that safe place for them to land.
And how can we support teens in foster care to make sure they have successful lives with their resource parents?
I think a lot of that comes down to training resource parents appropriately. I'm both a resource parent. I'm also a board member of New Mexico Children First Network. And we do a lot of training and advocacy on behalf of resource parents and foster youth. And one of the things that I notice is, again, if you're 14 years old coming into care, many of those kids have, they're very sophisticated in a sense that they know how to take care of themselves in terms of, you know, figuring out a way to get resources for themselves. They've had to do it. We don't want them to have to do it, but they've had to do it. And now they're at the cusp of adulthood and they need to be ushered into adulthood. And that's very different than caring for a five-year-old, a six-year-old who is kind of just starting school and really wants an attachment to mom and dad. Those foster youth who are older are really looking for a lot of love, but they're also looking for a lot of mentorship because they need the skills to be adults. I think the Fostering Connections was a wonderful idea. I'm so glad the legislature jumped on that. And made sure that that got passed, because there is this transitional period where someone's turned 18, but they're not a full-fledged adult.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you just talked about teens and what they need out of a resource parent. You know, they have other priorities. They have next steps, whether that's college or jobs or how to get there, transportation. And do you think we should be considering creating a whole separate system for teens that provides the resources that are more tailored to them?
I'm not sure that under current law we would be able to do that, but yes, I think overall, yes. I think teens are, you know, they have very unique needs in the system and are very unique places in their lives. And some of our teens are parents themselves. And so they are, you know, it would be awkward to drop them in a traditional family setting with their newborn and think that they're, you know, going to have the same kind of experience as a seven-year-old. You know, they're trying to figure out how to be parents themselves. They need more on the mentorship end. And so we have a lot of folks in the community who are involved in helping teens transition to adulthood. And I don't want to leave out our wonderful court-appointed special advocates, CASAs, because while these kids are oftentimes experiencing changes in resource homes, changes in schooling, changes in attorneys, oftentimes I hear that it's their court-appointed special advocate, their CASA, who is the consistent person in their lives all the time. And so we need more. We need a lot more. So if anyone's thinking about that, they want to get involved in helping foster youth, but maybe they don't feel like being a resource parent is the correct step for them, there is something else that they can engage in, and that is being a CASA. And so if you're interested in that, CASA New Mexico has a website. I'd encourage anyone to go and really look at that and see what they can do to help the kids in our community.
For sure. And it's estimated that 1,200 to 2,300 young people are experiencing homelessness in Bernalillo County. This data ranges from young adults ages 15 to 25. While not everyone in this number is part of the foster care system, how much of a factor is foster care in this kind of intersecting issue of homelessness?
I think it is it's a huge issue. And I think part of it is because our resources are stretched across the state. And what we don't want is for older youth to walk away from foster care because they don't feel their needs are being met. And I think that is definitely a portion of those foster care, those youth who are currently experiencing homelessness. We want them to stay engaged. We want them to stay engaged in services. We want them to be heard. So, you know, Alyssa, Michaela, I hear you. They have a place in this, a really important role to play in telling us what foster youth actually need.
And, you know, you just spoke about your legal perspective and your resource parent perspective. What would you say to people who are considering being resource parents, especially to teens?
that they need to really think about how they want to train themselves to become resource parents to teens, not to an infant. That's a very different model of parenting, but to teens in particular. So, you know, one, there is the mental health side of what's going on with foster youth. And so it's good to start building a network of resources in terms of counselors, doctors, anyone you can reach out to. Other foster parents are going to be a big resource to make sure that those mental health needs are being met right away. But also thinking back on what your own parents taught you when you were transitioning to adulthood. These kids oftentimes, you know, one of their big needs is going to be financial literacy. They're going to have to know how to handle their money moving into adulthood. It's an important skill we all need to learn. If you have a resource parent who is also a, you know, is parenting a youth who has a child themselves, again, that's a different model. And they need to understand and be able to help that youth learn how to parent appropriately, because what we don't want, even though we oftentimes see it, is a second or third generation having contact with the foster care system.
It's so important, like you said, just to break those cycles from the beginning. And from your legal perspective, I know you represented biological parents, but I'm sure you've seen cases with foster kids as well. What do you think is missing from our legal system?
Our legal system is really working hard to try and kind of catch up with today's youth. I think one of the things that happens is, you know, we write and codify law, and those laws may be, you know, 20, 30 years old, and our society's kind of moved on since then. And so we're constantly kind of playing catch up legislatively to make sure that we're meeting the needs of our youth and families in New Mexico. So I think a lot of what we need is we need to look at the Children's Code again, and make sure that we are definitely working in a direction where we can meet the needs of the youth in care.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks to everyone who called and emailed to share your thoughts. And thank you so much to our guests, Erica Point-Dexter, Erica Sanchez, Michaela Baca, Beth Hillia, Eli Fresquez, and Alyssa Davis. And let's keep the conversation going. Share your thoughts and ideas on Twitter using the hashtag Let's Talk New Mexico on Facebook. You can search for KUNM Radio, or you can leave us an email at letstalk@kunm.org. Tune in next week, and we'll be discussing a topic with Nash Jones, New Mexico, with the insurance issues in New Mexico without a cost for behavioral health. And if you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Our engineer for this morning was Mariano Spencer. Kaveh Movahead screened your calls. Robert Maldonado live tweeted the show. And news director Megan Kamrick is our executive producer. I'm Taylor Velazquez. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.